Western media, who are reporting on the recent elections held in annexed regions of Ukraine, claim Russian officials were going door to door to force residents to the polling stations where they were observed by armed police. Now, Western countries have denounced the elections as a violation of international law. I'm Skynell Hughes, and on this edition of 360 View, we are joined by one of the American election observers who will share with us what he witnessed during the three-day voting period. Let's get started. There is no greater duty or privilege for a citizen than the right to vote. This is exactly why the people of the regions of Donetsk, Kherson, Luhansk, and Zaporizhia were given the freedom to do so, along with 79 other regions in Russia. And just like elections held in almost every country around the world, voter integrity quickly came into question as the United Russia Party was overwhelmingly elected. Now, this was not hard to predict, as the election was condemned by most of the West even before the first ballot was cast. Accusations of intimidation, forced voting, and rigged elections could have just been copy and pasted from previous articles about Western elections, all lacking specifics and full of anonymous tips and sources. Unable to prevent this, the Russian government did what most foreign governments do and invited election observers from other countries to watch the balloting for transparency, legality, and offer confidence in the outcome. One observer, Steve Gill, who has traveled at the request of the United States Department of Defense multiple times, has told the truth about military operations when they felt like the mainstream media was misleading the American people in the belief that the troops on the ground were doing more harm than good. From Baghdad and Fallujah in 2005 to Guantanamo Bay detention facilities and to Kuwait, the United States military clearly has confidence in Steve Gill's ability as an independent observer of the action on the ground and the ability to tell the truth. Now Steve was just asked to do the same when observing the elections held in the recently annexed areas in Ukraine. Now Gill was formerly the Director of Intergovernmental Affairs for the U.S. Trade Representatives under both President Bush and Clinton. And Steve Gill also hosts a popular conservative talk radio show and practice international law. Steve Gill joins us today. Thank you for joining us. You just got back.
Thanks,
in fact.
Scotty. Yes.
Well, on that,
I got back about 48 hours ago.
Wow. So you're still trying to get over the jet lag. Let's start off with, what was your role as an election observer and what were you told to look out for?
You know, I really wasn't given instruction on what to look for. Basically, we were told we could look at anything we wanted to, talk to anybody we wanted to. And that's exactly what I did. I went to about seven different election sites in the Donbass region, went to Mariupol, was in Donetsk, was in a couple of the smaller towns and villages. But we were given the opportunity to ask anybody anything, to observe the process, which we did, take pictures. And we didn't just do this at the polling sites. Again, as we kind of traveled in and out of the restricted zone, we stopped at convenience stores and grocery stores and talked to people there. I talked to people in Moscow as well. And fortunately, I had a colleague of mine who has been on several of these observation visits to Russia and other countries, who speaks Russian. He's an American. He's a lawyer. He's actually a lawyer that I do work with on a regular basis. He speaks Russian. So I didn't just have to depend on the translators they provided to us. I could provide on my own guy. So I wasn't being given any kind of, information that wasn't accurate. And I'll tell you, Scotty, I have been involved in American politics for over four decades. I've worked in campaigns, run as a candidate. I've consulted formally and informally. And I was looking at this process at polling station to polling station, trying to figure out, how would I cheat? Not because I wanted to, but how would I cheat this system? And I got to tell you, I couldn't figure out a way.
Well, Steve, before we get to kind of what you actually saw, I have to wonder, why did you want to do this? Why was it important to you to travel across the world to observe these elections?
I got to tell you, Scotty, as you mentioned, I went to Iraq a couple of times. I've been to Kuwait. And in Iraq, after we liberated those people, they had the opportunity to vote. They had the opportunity to turn out, facing danger by the very act of casting their vote. And they dipped their fingers in purple ink that clearly designated them as somebody who had utilized that right to vote, marking them possibly for death and certainly for danger and risk. And they did that. And I felt like, given the opportunity to go see these areas where American media, Western media has ignored what's going on there for over a decade, where the voters there were having the first opportunity to cast their votes without the oppression or the restrictions being placed on them. They were theoretically dipping their fingers in purple ink. And I felt like having the opportunity, I would go dip my fingers in purple ink with them.
Well, it's interesting because already you're seeing some backlash. And so when you saw the elections and everything of your observations, you're obviously not afraid to talk about it. Are you worried about being called a Russian propagandist, as the Ukrainians have already done, or that you might actually have backlash here in the United States? In fact, I think they're actually calling for some sort of punishment on your head from the United States government.
Yeah, you have this transgender spokesperson for the Ukrainians, an American transgender who's gone over there to express, I guess, whatever propaganda the Ukrainians want to put out, who has threatened punishment for those of us who went to see and tell the truth. I got to tell you, I didn't see CNN or Fox News or The New York Times or The Washington Post or any other Western media outlets there actually seeing for themselves, hearing for themselves what's going on. And yet they're quick to, you know, carry out the Ukrainian propagandist from this this American transgender man or woman who's now over there, you know, spewing out the propaganda. So, yeah, you know, we've already been being attacked and criticized. It's been said that we gorged on the bodies of dead Ukrainians while we were there. I'll tell you, I had some borscht. I had some beef stroganoff. I didn't eat any dead babies while I was there.
Well, let's get to the election itself. What did you observe?
You know, it was a lot like election sites here in the United States. You know, people came in. There were not busloads being brought in. They were not being brought in by armed guards. This idea that they were being forced to vote is the furthest thing from the truth. And again, I was at seven different polling stations throughout the region. Others in our group were at different ones. I can just tell you what I saw. And people were enthusiastically voting. They were getting the opportunity to express themselves. And as I talked to them, they were excited. They weren't coming in sad and depressed. It, again, was a joyous occasion. There were many times they were playing music at the site. At one of the sites, they had a Russian group of folk singers singing and performing for us to kind of share their Russian history. And people, I think, in the West don't understand that this part of Ukraine speaks Russian. They identify as Russian. And for the last 9 years, they've been attacked and brutalized by the Ukrainians, trying to force them to be Ukrainian when they identify as Russians. So what we saw is people coming in, being able to cast their votes. The voting boxes are completely transparent. You slide your written ballot through a little slot, so you can't stuff in more than one. When you're going through the process, you have to show your passport, your government-issued photo ID. You then sign in to vote in which one you're wanting to sign into. And most people, of course, were voting in both the local provincial elections for their basically their mayors, their governor, as well as for those that were being sent to Russia in some of the areas to represent them in the Duma, their House of Representatives, so to speak. And they would pick, you know, they would sign in to get two ballots to vote in those. They would fill out the ballot in the curtain where they were, again, covered from view, just like in the United States. And then they would cast their vote in that open box. It was transparent for everybody to see. One of the interesting things that they do in Russia that we should do here in the United States is they have video cameras live streaming what's going on in those polling stations throughout the whole course of the election day, or multiple days as the case may be. So anybody anywhere in the Soviet Union or former Soviet Union, now Russia, can go online and actually watch at a particular polling station what's going on in real time. And in Moscow at the Election Central, they had party representatives from the various parties sitting in a large room with computer screens in front of them with 15 or 20 different polling sites that they were observing at any given time, shifting to whatever they wanted to watch. You talk about transparency. It was live streaming, real voting, so anybody could see what was going on. And they also recorded. So if somebody raises an issue and wants to go back and say, hey, I suspected something at 12:45, let's see if somebody came in and voted here a second time that had voted in another precinct. It's on the record. It's there to see. And then at the end of the day, they do the count in the same way, visible, transparent. They then hold up the vote count after the party people there have watched them count the votes. They hold up the number so everybody can see, and then that number is transmitted to Moscow, where the central election numbers are taken into place. I will tell you, Scotty, if we had had this in effect in the United States, Joe Biden would not be president.
Wow, that is a pretty strong statement on there. But like you said, it's transparency from the beginning to the end. There's also the conflict itself going on. Tell us a little bit about the cities themselves. I don't know how much you were able to see. The war's been going on now for almost 18 months. What did you observe in both the streets of Moscow as well as the territories?
Well, in the territories, the conflict's actually been going on in the Donbass region for more like 9 years, where they've been seeking independence from Ukraine and the Ukrainian militia. Many of these Azov battalions have been coming in, brutalizing, murdering, raping people. It's no surprise that the people in this area want to be separate from Ukraine when they've experienced the shelling and the brutality for almost a decade and then have the opportunity to pursue another course. So there were the bombed out buildings. We were in parts of areas where the shelling was obvious, where the destruction was obvious. We did not get within about 50 kilometers of the actual front lines because that's about the length of the missile range, and they didn't put us in that danger. But in parts of Donetsk, you're still having drone strikes. One of the polling stations that one of our team was visiting later in the day was hit by a Ukrainian drone strike just before the voting took place. So the threats, the intimidation that we're hearing about was there, but it was coming from Ukraine. It wasn't coming from the Russians in that side. And in Moscow, I think most Americans have a perception of Moscow as this kind of Soviet era, gloomy, concrete buildings. Nothing could be further from the truth. I had not been in Moscow for about 25 years, and I was shocked at how much it has changed. Gleaming, tall skyscrapers. I ate dinner one night at the 84th floor. I think it's the tallest building in Europe in Moscow City that would challenge the beauty and the glass and steel of any American city that you would want to find. And in Moscow, people were going about their business. You know, there was a seven-story mall next to the hotel I stayed in. Seven stories, each floor was bigger than the biggest malls in Nashville. So I'm not seeing the sanctions bring the Russians to their knees based on what I saw.
Okay, so then let's talk about the people. Did you get a chance to interact with any of the locals? And how did they actually feel about you being an American?
You know, they were actually excited about the fact that somebody in America could maybe tell the truth about what they're experiencing. A couple of quick stories. At one of the polling places, there was a dad with his young daughter that was there, and it struck me that, you know, if you're being oppressed, if you're in danger, you're not bringing your young child to vote with you and show the future to her that you're casting your vote for. There was another lady who was an election commissioner in one of the smaller villages that we went to. She said she had lived there her entire life. And for 40 years, there was a bridge next to her house that had been blocked. And it said, do not cross, danger, you know, that it was a broken down bridge. The Soviet era, they didn't repair it. The Ukrainian era, they haven't repaired it. But in 1 year, since they have been liberated from the military fighting there, they have a brand new bridge. We saw the same thing in Mariupol, where you have the bombed out apartment buildings. And then across the street, you have four or five brand new 1,000-unit apartments that have just been constructed in just the last year, with Chinese contractors doing most of that work. So American contractors could be doing a lot of work to sort of rebuild what's been broken, but instead others in the world are going to be doing that and making those profits. One other lady at one of the polling stations was talking to me about the new schools, the new construction, the roadways that have been built in just the last year since the Ukrainians have been moved out and the new construction has taken place, that the Americans are placing bombs and missiles and weapons at the disposal of the Ukrainians that are being shot into their neighborhoods. The Chinese are bringing construction and cement and tractors and trucks. Who are we going to have more affinity for in 10 years, she asked, the Americans or the Chinese?
Wow. Thank you, Steve. Hold on. Because after the break, we're going to continue our conversation with Steve Gill on this trip, observing elections in Moscow and the annexed regions of Ukraine, and how those observations compare to visits to other countries on behalf of the United States government.
Jeffrey's It turns out there's a line you cross at some point in the way you perceive the view out of your window. It's no longer personal, but rather detached, abstracted. When we live on the sixth floor, we feel like we're actually involved in everything that happens in the neighborhood, whether we want to or not. There's a sense of engagement, of belonging. But as soon as we go up, say to the 12th floor, the view from the window becomes more like a picture, an image on a TV screen.
Hi, I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'm here to plead with you, whatever you do, do not watch my new show. Seriously, why watch something that's so different? Why listen to opinions that you won't get anywhere else? Look, if it pleases you to have the State Department, the CIA, weapons makers, multi-billion dollar corporations choose your facts for you, go ahead. Why change? And whatever you do, don't watch my show. Stay mainstream, because I'm probably going to make you uncomfortable. My show is called Direct Impact. But again, you probably don't want to watch it, because it might just change the way you think.
Every spring and summer, the melting Arctic snow reveals abandoned machinery, millions of rusty barrels, and the detritus left by human expansion into this most inaccessible of territories.
Я, конечно, был в шоке, как можно было так засраться по самые помидоры. Это просто печальное зрелище.
Volunteers from Clean Arctic travel to Heise Island, home to the biggest polar station on the Franz Josef Land archipelago.
Сера, грязь непролазная. Боже мой, я тут еще целый месяц.
У меня были первые мысли. Нас обманули, нам подсунули какой-то самый стрёмный остров во всем архипелаге.
Это одна из самых северных земель на нашей планете, от которой до Северного полюса примерно 1000 километров.
The Arctic pioneers' main objective was to explore and conquer these harsh lands. They had no time to think about waste management. Now their legacy could remain for centuries.
Как мы, наверное, человечество в целом выглядим, наверное, нелицеприятно. Такое чувство, что мы застрем эту планетку, а потом полетим куда-то делать это еще.
Чистый север, чистая Арктика!
Welcome back to the show. You're watching the 360 View, and I'm Scotty Nell Hughes. We went to bring back in Steve Gill, conservative radio show host. Steve, as I mentioned in your introduction, you have traveled the globe at the request of the United States Department of Defense, multiple trips to observe balloting and war-torn areas. So how did this trip compare to your visit to Iraq with the various military branches and post-Operation Iraqi Freedom? I think that was in 2005 in Baghdad and Fallujah. You also went to the detention facility at Guantanamo Bay right before the courts were opening open. What was that like comparison?
You know, there was a lot more military presence in those experiences than I had in Moscow, and certainly even going into the Donbass region, Donetsk, and some of the other areas. You know, there's some of the Ukrainian propaganda that's claiming that people are being forced to go vote, that soldiers are driving them to the polling places. Nothing could be further from the truth. Again, there were soldiers, one or two, at each polling place, guarding and protecting the people who were coming to exercise their right to vote. There were teachers that were voting. There were city officials who were coming and voting. There were just regular citizens, people who work in one of the areas in the coal mines. A lot of it was very agricultural. One of the areas that we went into, you drove miles and miles and miles through sunflower seed fields, with both sides of the road being miles and miles of sunflower seeds. It looked like parts of rural Tennessee, frankly, before you got to the polling stations. Some of them were these old classic buildings. Others were in brand new schools that have just been rebuilt in the last year. So it was very much a peaceful setting. It was not like, you know, Fallujah. It was not like Tikrit or Baghdad or the military security that you saw in Guantanamo Bay. And again, I've been in places where they're essentially occupied territories, like in Iraq, where there's soldiers on every corner. In Moscow, in these areas of Ukraine, you did not see a military presence. Now, they may be on the front lines where they're still engaged in combat, but in these areas where I was, you're not seeing a big military presence that's being oppressive or repressing the people. And more importantly, you're not seeing U.S. and Western media there to see what's there to be seen, to hear what's there to be heard. They don't care to report the truth in these areas. And that's been the case from the outset of this conflict. You get the propaganda that is issued to the Western media by Ukraine that they just report, whether it's the ghost of Kiev or these other stories, and you're not having anybody on the other side reporting what's going on to the people who are suffering in Donbass, in Luhansk, and Donetsk, and these other areas. The absence of media was more glaring than the presence of military.
Well, it's interesting you bring this up, Steve, because when you look at what you're saying, you're in the minority over here in the West. In fact, probably several will dismiss this whole interview saying it's just Russian propaganda. Why? Because you're, and you and I have not talked before this interview. I've not told you what to say. Nobody's told you what to say. You're saying the exact consistent thing you've said all along. What you're saying, though, is exactly opposite in many cases to what the mainstream media is reporting in the West to the American people. It contradicts what they're reporting, what you actually observed during the election in these different countries, in these different areas. Why do you feel like, first of all, should we listen to the minority? Because there's only a few of you that are saying this. Why should that, and why would people in America and the West purposely being led with misinformation about what's going on in the area?
Look, I've said for a while that anytime you're only getting one side of the story from the media, you know you're being scammed. You know you're being lied to, whether it's COVID, whether it's the vaccines, whether it's what's going on in this region, in Ukraine and Russia. We're only being told one side of the story. And anytime that's the case, you should be even more skeptical than normal in listening to the media. And we're being told that we're fighting for democracy in Ukraine, that our $130 billion or so that's gone into the Zelensky administration is fighting for democracy. And yet it is Zelensky that has attacked the Russian Orthodox churches and shut them down. It's he that has canceled elections and now is saying he's not going to have them unless the American taxpayers pay for the election. He's the one that has shut down opposition media, critical media in his country. He's the one that shut down opposition political parties in his country. None of that is representative of democracy or freedom. And yet that's not being reported widely in the United States or in Western Europe either. You know, it's no problem that the American people in particular don't know what's going on there because they're not getting the truth. They're not being told the truth. And you've got too many politicians that are just blindly taking the, we got to be anti-Russia, we got to be anti-Putin. And I'm not a fan of Putin. I'm not a particular fan of Russia. I'm a fan of the truth. And you know, over the last 30 years of my career in TV and talk radio, nobody's told me what to say, whether it was about a state income tax in Tennessee or political figures in Tennessee or nationally. So the idea that somehow I'm a shill for either side, I just went to see it myself and to tell what I've seen. And what I've seen is we are not getting the truth in the United States, and the media are doing a disservice when they don't go find the truth and tell it.
But why is that, Steve? Why are they not telling the truth to the American people or to anybody in the West?
You know, we just had a war in Afghanistan come to an end, and we left behind about $80 billion of equipment. You've got those that sell missiles and bombs and bullets that have a big industry. The military industrial corporation entity is not a lie. It is real. The reasons they run all those TV commercials with fighter jets on the Sunday morning political shows is not so people watching at home will go out to buy an F-35. They're doing that to communicate to members of Congress and the Senate and the deep state that they've got money, that they're in play, and if you want their money, you want their assistance, you better play on their team. So after that war ends, they got to find a new place to sell bullets and bombs and missiles, and they're selling them that we're then giving or trading to Ukraine. So the question is, what's the next conflict that they're going to get us into just to fund their business? And I'll tell you, when I'm looking in the Donbass region and the construction and the rebuilding that's already going on, American contractors ought to be first in line over there to get their share of the reconstruction of that area rather than letting the Chinese and Saudis and everybody else in the world go in, because they are going in there and they're going to rebuild it. And again, the affinity they're going to have for those countries and those people is going to be greater than Americans coming in Johnny come lately trying to get a piece of the pie later. I know it sounds unfortunate that we're letting our military-industrial complex direct our foreign policy. But when you're looking at the money that flowed into the Biden family, the money that flowed into Hunter Biden, there's no secret that money talks, and what you're seeing it play out is lives are being lost. And fortunately, American lives aren't on the ground there being lost. But if we don't stop it soon, that may be next.
Well, that's what I have to ask you. And final question here. Do you feel like the Russian people were preparing for this conflict to escalate, possibly a full world war, something that we continue to hear threatened here in the West? Are you hearing that over in Russia?
I didn't see that in Moscow or the other parts of Russia I was in. And when you look at the videos coming from Kyiv, where they're having pool parties and the nightclubs are still open, they don't look like they're really preparing for World War III either. It's business as usual there. It's business as usual in Moscow. The ones that are living in these areas where the conflict is taking place for whatever agenda some in the West and that the Zelensky administration has, they're the ones suffering, and we all ought to be pushing for peace. I'm shocked that the Democratic Party that used to be the anti-war party is now combining with the pro-war Republicans to push war at any cost, because American lives aren't being put at risk at this point. And keep in mind, the corruption in Ukraine is deep. Some of our members of Congress are starting to ask about it. Where's the money going? Why can't we get accountability of where the funds are going? And yet we're being denied that at every turn. And yet the Zelensky administration has fired about a dozen of their top officials for corruption. He just fired his defense minister for corruption, just fired six deputy defense ministers for corruption. The idea that the only honest person in Ukraine is Zelensky is as crazy as the fact that the Western media won't cover any of this.
Well, it's very interesting, Steve, and I think it's going to be interesting to see if you suffer any backlash here at home, as the Ukrainian minister has called for, and I'm sure you'll keep us updated on this story as it continues to progress. Thank you so much for joining us, Steve.
Thanks, Scotty.
I'm Skynell Hughes, and this has been your 360 view of the news, which affects you. Thanks for watching.